I think that what happens is that if you're listening and you're open to the potential of somebody and their unique skill set, if you're tuned in to that person, then you have an opportunity to harvest a unicorn out of the interview process.
Welcome to Ambition Theory, Women in Construction. This show asks questions that everybody is thinking about but doesn't want to say out loud. It's about tackling complex topics like, why are there so few women in senior leadership positions? What is it going to take to change this? Each episode is a combination of motivation and tactical strategies to get ahead. We get out of our comfort zones and we take action. We learn, grow, and create opportunities. I am your host, Andrea Jansen, a certified executive coach with an MBA, and since 2018, I've coached over 1,000 construction professionals to level up their leadership. Let's get started. Jerry Naranjo, the CEO of Naranjo Civil Constructors, is a passionate, engaging, innovative, and heart-centered business leader with over 30 years of experience. He has been a pioneer in the civil construction industry in Colorado, leading his firm to build some of the state's most iconic and innovative river restoration projects. Jerry is a trusted advisor to employees and clients alike, guiding them with insights on business matters, scaling, operations, organizational management, visionary leadership, and relentless execution. His unique roadmap to success is based in positivity, authentic relationships, and replacing goals with actions. In this episode, we talked about why company culture is one of the most important things in business, how to attract and retain high-performing talent, what it's like to be a heart-centered leader in the construction industry. And I got to ask Jerry some questions that inspired me as a business owner on some strategies that I want to take back and implement in my business. I learned a ton from this interview, and I hope you do as well. Do you know what the number one question we get when speaking to companies about our Leadership Accelerator program for women in construction? We already have an internal leadership program or a mentorship program available, which is great. But the thing is, these programs don't work the same way for women as they do for men. There are many reasons why, but the most striking one that if you're a woman listening right now, you'll probably recognize right away. It's the double bind. We did some research last year and found that 78% of women were told that if they wanted to accelerate their path to leadership, they needed to be more confident. But 70% of those same women were also told that they were being too bossy. Basically, as soon as a woman embodies the traits most typically associated with leadership in the construction industry, they're faced with negative feedback. This is the double bind. And this is why specialized training for women is needed. If you want to learn more about how our Leadership Accelerator program can help you address the double bind and many other obstacles women face on the path to leadership, please visit ambitiontheory.com/LAP. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to Ambition Theory, Women in Construction. I am so honored that you're joining us today. Can you introduce yourself and share what you do?
Thanks for having me. I'm very honored to be a part of your podcast. And my name is Jerry Naranjo. I am the owner, CEO of a construction company based out of Northern Colorado, Naranjo Civil Constructors. I'm also a father of two boys, ages 17 and 20. And I'm also the owner-operator of a philanthropic farm in the Loveland, Colorado area. So that's me in a nutshell. I think those are my big three.
And what do you love about the construction industry?
I grew up in construction. My dad was always, as long as I can remember, and as far as the history books tell it in my family, he was always in construction. And being the first born in my dad's family, my dad was 17 when I was born. And it was his idea that if you have a son, then he goes to work with you. So that's all I did my entire childhood. I think where I had spare time, I was with my dad in the construction industry. And he was heavily involved in concrete construction, so flat work, and then later on concrete structures. So I really grew up around it. I really enjoyed the camaraderie, the people piece. And as he started to develop his business, I really started to enjoy the technical pieces, the engineering that went into all of it. So yeah, construction's always been my favorite thing to do.
I love it. And it's literally become, and you're growing with it, creating new things, which we're going to talk about on this podcast today. But when I first learned about Naranjo, so I was at a National Association of Women in Construction event, and everybody had to introduce themselves and talk about what they did and what company they worked for. And, you know, people are going around the circle, and Nelly and Jess, who work at Naranjo, were there. I'd never met them before, never heard about you before. And the way they introduced themselves was different than everybody else. And it's hard to describe, but there was this energy, there was this passion, there was this pride about being a part of Naranjo. And I paid attention. I'm like, who are those people? And what is this company? Because there's something special there. And a couple of weeks later, I was fortunate enough to go to the Colorado Contractors Association conference. And it's so interesting. Like, I reached out to Jess because she's in business development and I'm new to Colorado. I was going to this conference by myself just to get to know the industry. And, you know, it kind of sucks going to a conference by yourself. I'm like, let me message Jess and see if she's going. She's in business development. Like, maybe she'll be there and I can, you know, say hi to someone when I get there. So yeah. I messaged her and she's like, Jerry's speaking. You got to come to his talk. I'm like, fantastic. I'll be there. So I show up and I got so much out of your presentation, but you ended it with a quote and it is, I'm going to read it. And if I get it wrong, you let me know, you correct me. When culture is your strategy, you can stop playing checkers and you can start playing chess. And it resonated so much with me because I feel like from a business perspective, it is so, so relevant. But before we go dissect that quote, I'm wondering if you can take us back to when you joined the company. And specifically, I'm curious about the culture in the industry and also the culture in the company at the time.
Oh, yeah, sure thing. So I graduated from Colorado School of Mines in 1993. I was a mining software engineer, and I learned a computer program that allowed me to travel all over the world. And I just happened to land in Northern Colorado with my dad, helping him upgrade his company, you know, bring a computer into the office, try to replace the fax machine with a computer, all these really little tweaks while I had a couple weeks off. Well, my next big assignment fell through and my dad said, well, why don't you stick around with us? I said, well, that doesn't really make sense financially, but let's talk about it. And we ended up going after a project, getting a project. And we took his, what was a structural concrete company, and we started building on that. And we created, you know, our own excavation crews. We started doing our own GC work. And I never left after that. And from that point forward, that was in 99 is when I had my layover in Northern Colorado. In the early 2000s is when I started to transition into changing the company and from just a concrete company to a concrete and a excavation river restoration type company. And for me, it was really difficult because, well, one, you're in family business, which is always difficult, right? My dad is my dad. I have a ton of respect for him. I also had an uncle in there and had a ton of respect for him. But we're trying to grow. We're trying to scale. And so I'm navigating those intricate relationships. And then I'm also bringing a different kind of leadership in the way that I was taught or in the way that I am and just how I approach life was different. So I would say in the early 2000s, it was more of a dictatorial type leadership style where, you know, the leaders were very firm. They were very tough. It was do the job or get out. And I really started to find ways around that where I was building relationships, not only with clients, but with employees. And then when can we start building a relationship with an employee where they become vested in the direction and the growth of the company? So the unique thing that I brought to the company at that time was, yeah, I understand we got to be really tough in construction. We got to be really tough because, you know, the workforce in construction responds to tough leaders. But I started to navigate this different leadership style to see if it was going to pay off. And yeah, I think it started to, it paid off in working with clients. It paid off in working with my family. And then it started to pay off in working with employees.
So I'm really curious. You said like you had been taught this leadership style that was different. And I'm so curious where you learned this.
Well, I was fortunate enough to, when I graduated from school, I went to work for an international company. And, you know, I talk about this a lot. In my lifetime, people have been put in my path who were just excellent at so many things, excellent at work ethic, excellent personality, evaluating personalities, work styles. And so I had mentors along the way who taught me these types of things. And they were big, you know, men working in big corporations, women in leadership. And I had exposure to all of that. I just, outside of the construction world, I had exposure to the professional world. And I think in traveling and, you know, I traveled to several countries during my first few years out of college. And I learned to have an appreciation for different people in different backgrounds and building teams and just building respect across diverse workforces. So my company that I worked for at the time was going to go to Germany, Venezuela, Australia, Czech Republic. And so we're navigating all these different cultures. And I think the leaders and the mentors I had at that time really taught me to build relationships, right? You have to build trust and build relationships, especially as Americans coming over to assist their industry.
So you are literally the definition of a transformational leader, and you do operate in a transactional world. So construction today is still very transactional. I'm curious, because your culture is so transformational and that's the way you run your business, have there been any challenges working with other companies or other people that are more, you know, expecting that transactional approach?
Yeah, I mean, there are. I think there are people who still in the construction industry who respond more to a command and control dictator style leadership. And, you know, while that's sunsetting, I would call it, when it, you know, people from those generations are, that respond to that type of leadership is getting fewer and fewer. It is still a challenge and it is still not always effective, but I think for the most part, I would say that it's primarily and mostly effective. And where it isn't, I think it's in places where people are going to respond to a firm hand or very tough demands. And that's just what they're used to. So it has been a struggle in some ways to navigate that particular segment of the workforce. But for the most part, I think we're slowly adapting as an industry to this type of leadership. And I think it is the path to the future of how our industry is going to go. I don't know that I struggle with it sometimes, just because to lead in that way or to be heart-centered in your leadership, it can be pretty heavy sometimes. You know, every employee is important to you and it gets very personal, where things are transaction and somebody may leave your company for personal reasons or business reasons. You know, that as a heart-centered leader, that those things get really hard sometimes. So it's not a walk in the park all the time.
Have you put something in place some support in place? I know you just got back from India, so you do some unconventional things that we don't see a lot of construction leaders do. Do you do that to counteract the kind of emotional, you know, cost of leading in the way that you do?
I think I do. I don't think I did it on purpose or by design, but I think I subliminally would feel the weight of that, and I would surround myself with mentors. So in 2017, 2018, as my dad was getting ready to retire and I was buying out his shares of the business, I reached out to a mentor/coach. And my objective there was to navigate the buyout. I wanted a second set of eyes on that transaction. And I really wanted to get a fair deal done. And I really wanted a relationship with my dad maintained, right? And so in so many cases in family business, the succession causes just disgruntled parties on both sides. So by engaging a coach and a mentor and watching that whole process with me to make sure I was doing everything I needed to be doing, and I was, you know, recovering from difficult emotional negotiations, I think I learned that there are people out there who can provide support to heart-centered leaders, and, you know, surround yourself with like minds. And so I spend a ton of time with people like that, people who are in business like me, or people who are, you know, making the way through the coaching world, maybe some alternative modalities. But it to me is important to have those conversations to lighten the load, the emotional load of what it takes to be a heart-centered leader.
I love it. So you need the support, that network of people that kind of believe what you believe.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. So I want to go back to that quote about the culture being the strategy. Can you tell me when you figured that out?
I think I've been on that path for quite a while, but it really started to come together for me when I purchased some land here in Loveland, which is now Three Spikes Farm. So just over 2 years ago, I found this piece of land that I've been looking for forever. It's 12 acres. It's just off the interstate. It makes it easy access to Denver Metro. So we could store equipment, construction materials, some of our trucks. We just had a place to lay down all of those extra things. Well, in acquiring that property and moving out here, we started to figure out that as people were coming out and they started to get familiar with this new property, I brought in a couple steers. And then with all the interest that was generated from that, I noticed that all of my people started to congregate towards the corrals and watch the steers and measure how they're doing and have conversations about it. And it just really created this sense of community that I started to put my finger on. So what I did at that time is I grabbed seven more. I brought them in. We raised them. I said, everybody who's in the key personnel or key manager of the company will get half a beef at the end of the year. So it created this excitement, this community, this goodwill around this place. And it was at that point that I realized what I'd been doing all along, right? And that was creating trust and community and really treating employees like family. And from that, we then created a community garden. We have chickens, and we started sharing the eggs from the chickens. And we would take the produce from the garden, and we would share that with former employees of Naranjo. We would share that with people on fixed income in our community. And then we started, you know, anything beyond that, we would take to the food bank in our local community. And the energy around that just started to create this buzz that I could really feel that we were onto something, right? Like, we really all just want to be, we just all want to have deep human connection and have a trust. And this place created that for us. And I think it was then that I realized what I'd been up to sort of casually was now really our strategy as a company.
So I'm really curious how it went from this like side, because it seems separate from the construction business. So it went from this kind of side thing, partially kind of like on the side of the company, to the culture, like shifting into the for-profit business, which is very successful. So how did that happen? When I started Ambition Theory over 5 years ago, I knew that if we genuinely wanted to make the construction industry inclusive for women, that change needed to start at the top. But 5 years ago, nobody was ready to hear this message. Something has shifted recently, though, and it's really exciting. Organizations are reaching out because they want us to do a presentation for their leadership teams, and in some cases, the entire company. They see that up until now, the burden of change has rested entirely on the shoulders of women. If this message speaks to your association or company, we want to hear from you. Visit ambitiontheory.com/book-a-call to learn how you can book a presentation for your organization.
It wasn't by design, really. I mean, I think it was all from the place of, so you're an employee of Naranjo, and we're going to use Three Spikes Farm as a meeting place. So we refinished the barn, and that became our meeting place. So then that created the community, because a lot of our employees live in Denver. A lot of them live in Northern Colorado, but we went to the farm. That was our community, our common area. We all, everybody has their, it's unspoken, but everybody has their parking spot out here. It's just sort of everybody's backyard in a way. So as that started to develop, I really think that it wasn't that we took this nonprofit and ported that over to the for-profit. It was always a for-profit Naranjo, but we really created the culture over here in the philanthropic farm. And that transfers into everything we do, right? I think it transfers into not only our construction business, but it transfers in how we show up in our communities as citizens of our communities.
Okay, that's really cool. So what's the time frame in that? It just sounds really cool. It's like we had this culture and then we just started doing it in the business and it's working really well. Can you unpack that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think we were always, you know, as far as culture goes, we were always a little bit different, right? We were very much heart-centered leaders, very involved in the community. We took great care to take care of our employees. And you know, there would be certain places in opportunities in the construction industry or in our construction business where we could be heart-centered and really be different. But what Three Spikes Farm allowed us to do was to really expand on that. And it gave everybody an opportunity to contribute. So all employees are able to come out to the farm and they're able to harvest something out of the garden, or they're able to walk around and mess around with the cows, or, you know, it just became our community. So I think we were always doing it on some level, but Three Spikes Farm actually just cemented it in for us that we were onto something special.
Okay. So now I want to go from the shift from checkers to chess. Can you describe that? Because it's very clear in my mind, but I don't know if everybody understands this, and I want to actually hear from you what that means.
Yeah. So people talk about strategy, recruit and retain. And my theory on that is, as we are navigating this construction industry and trying to build and scale our business, what we decided was that our culture was really unique and really special. And when we started to recognize that, the employees of Naranjo started to embrace it. So what that meant is they were able to become advocates of their workplace, right? So if we're out putting an ad now hiring, or you know, looking for an operator or a tradesman or, you know, any other professional in the construction industry, the people who were part of the culture did a lot of that marketing for us. Like, oh, you got to come work at Naranjo because we do this really cool thing at the farm. What we do at the farm is really different, you know? So they became advocates for our mission. And that in a way it's not a checkers move. You put an ad, you wait for resumes to come in, you filter the resumes, right? When you're playing chess, is you're making multiple moves at multiple times because your employees are advocates of what you're trying to do. So you hear the term often that, well, it's really hard to recruit and retain people. Well, we do have that problem, but we don't have it at the level that other companies do. So people they hear about what we're doing over here. They get excited about that. They want to be a part of that. And we do a lot of outreach to employees and their kids and their spouses. So when people from other companies or other people in the industry hear about that, and that's not happening at their company, if they're ever looking for a place to land, we're on their radar because they've heard of this special thing we're doing.
Okay, that's cool. So from a retention and an attraction perspective, it's working very well because it's like you're leveraging. It's like the snowball effect, like attracts like, and then they spread the word. I'm really curious from other areas of the business, what does playing chess look like versus playing checkers?
Well, so if you look at just our management group, so in January, I took all of the managers to Tucson. And we holed up in an Airbnb for a day and a half. And we did some really deep work on, you know, who are you? How do you show up in the world? How do you show up at the workplace? How do you interact with each other? So it's not all about systems and responsibilities and chain of command. It's really like, how do you show up and be supportive to your coworker? Or how do you show up as the best version of you so that your coworker feels like they're in alignment with you or that they trust you? You start doing those things. And I have found that people start, it's not the 1 + 1 = 2. It's a 1 + 1 = 10. They really start to collaborate. They start to feed off of each other. And I think that energy it shows in, you know, maybe some of the presentations we give when we're trying to compete for work. It definitely shows up when we have entire company get-togethers, that we have this synergy because we're all on the same page. So we're in making one move of getting together, and this person does this and this person talks to that person. Well, the way we're doing it, I feel like we're making multiple moves at multiple times with multiple people because we have so much buy-in from our employees.
That's cool. It sounds like it's exponential output versus like the sum is greater than the inputs.
Yeah, exactly. That's and you get really to know cool. people on an intimate level like that, where you're not only talking about work issues, but you're talking about life issues, and you know you're putting yourself in the room with people that we've all been through it, and we all have things to share with each other, and that translates to higher trust in the workplace, which translates into so many good things, right?
Totally. Okay. So when in your presentation at the Colorado Contractors Association conference, you talked about this unicorn employee. And I remember everybody, the audience was putting their hand up, asking questions like, where did you find this unicorn? Like, how did you get this person to do this? Because they saw something that you had achieved that all of them were trying to figure out and they had not been able to do it. And I loved your presentation. But this part, your answer did not sit right with me. I'm going to be honest. And I want to ask you more about it because I actually think, I don't think the unicorn employee was just out in the world. You magically found them and they were able to do this thing that nobody else could do. I'm sure that person's extremely talented, but I think it's the combination of that talent plus the environment at Naranjo that actually created the unicorn experience and allowed you to do that. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, he is a unicorn for sure because he is very talented. But I think that what happens is that if you're listening and you're open to the potential of somebody and their unique skill set, if you're tuned in to that person, then you have an opportunity to harvest a unicorn out of an interview process, right? So this kid, I interviewed him. So his dad approached me, goes, this is my son. I'm going to send him your way. He does something with computers. I don't know, but maybe you got a use for him. I said, well, he's your son. I'm going to interview him because I respect you and I'm going to do that. And yeah, I'm curious to know what he's all about. But, you know, I didn't go into that with any grand ideas of how this was going to work out. But as soon as I interviewed him, I knew something was special about this kid. And I said, well, I've got to put him into our company somehow. And let's see what he can do. I put him in two or three different places. And then it clicked that he actually was very special. And we went off in this direction and started developing apps. We started developing project specific websites. We started doing all these amazing technology things. If he would have been, you know, talented in some other department, I probably would have built something around that too. So it's one of those things where when somebody's special and they bring a work ethic and an attitude and a skill set, and in a business our size, we're small enough that we can we can be nimble and experimental. When somebody comes in with special talent like that, you can almost create an opportunity around them. And that was my thinking at the time. It's like, I don't know what this guy can do for the construction company, but I know he needs to work here and I know we need to figure it out.
So how did you know that? Do you have I'm really curious about your recruitment process, because it's like you're able to attract these highly qualified, highly motivated people, but how do you measure if they're going to be a fit or not? Like in this case, you're like, the fit is magical. It sounds like the fit there was magical, right? It's like, it doesn't matter what they're doing. They're going to excel because that, your culture, their culture, that mesh, you get that exponential productivity. But when you're hiring other people, how do you know if they're going to get a fit? Because as you're describing that meeting that you did in Tucson, I was like, not everybody would be comfortable, would be okay doing that, right? Like, I feel like you kind of have the culture whether you're either in or you're out. So how do you know if people are in or not? How do you measure that?
Well, surprisingly, and I was feeling the same way about Tucson. And we have some very traditional construction people coming down to Tucson with us. And, we all went in with this idea that, maybe not everybody's going to be into this kind of thing. But it was surprising that people felt comfortable. They just feel a level of trust. We had 100% buy-in at that event. And I think the people we were most worried about, like resisting that type of get together, were actually the ones who got the most out of it, and they've never been surrounded by people who are open and accepting and doing some work on a deeper level. So I think for me, and one of the things that I can speak to is I'm not new to construction. I'm not new to this world, right? I'm 53 years old, so I've been around the block. What is important to me is that I've been on a path of personal development for quite a long time, 5-7 years. And I started way too late, but I did start eventually. And I think being on that path to personal development, you start to recognize special things about people, especially when people are special, right? So if I can interview somebody and I find out and feel like they've got a special talent, or they've got a work ethic that's just extra, I definitely pause and try to think about how they would fit in our company.
Oh, I love it. It sounds like you're able to see people's strengths and then kind of like align it with where the company's going, which is like, again, I think why people want to work there, why they stay there, why they're like, I'm going to try this really awkward exercise and go deep with these people that I work with, because it's like that opportunity of growth is there and that personal growth is there, and it also benefits the company. So then you just have all those levels like working together, that synergy. It's really cool to see that happen.
Well, we've had a lot of employees who've been with us a long time. Like we got Nellie, who's in our office, and she's our office HR manager, is now our safety manager. We got John Leone, who's been with us 17 plus years. He's our company president. I mean, they're really the foundation for all this experimenting, right? Like I can go do this and try this person in this role, but I know that I've got really solid people all around me, and it allows us to take a few more risks on people and their unique talents.
I love it. And so I'm really curious about you, because you do kind of run a different ship than the typical, than your competitors. So what gives you the courage to like keep going and the confidence? Like, where does this come from to know that it's going to work?
You never know it's going to work. I think in construction and as a small business owner, you just never know, right? We all live in fear at times. But I spent a lot of years in the business, and I started in 99. It's now going to be 24 years. And over those 24 years, I made a lot of mistakes, but it was slow, steady growth based on people. And that was always the philosophy. So after all those years and all that experience, I still think it's the foundation of who we are and how I do things. And it's always based on people. And I have an eye for picking people. I have an eye for pursuing good talent. I don't know, I don't always pick right, but I'm always on the lookout for talent, and whether they can build rivers or they can build bridges or they can build widgets, if they're special in some way, then I want to see how they can fit into our company.
I love it. That is so cool. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Jerry, today. So we always wrap up our podcast the same way, with a 24-hour action that people can take. So that means like a baby step to just get started, get the ball rolling when you learn something new, because we know it's great to listen to the podcast, but if you don't implement it, that's all it was. You're not really going to get the result. So I'm curious, if people are listening to this and you're like, I like this idea of making culture the strategy, but it's such a big idea. How do we break it down into a baby step that you can take to get started?
I didn't prepare for this, but I think my recent trip to India prepared me for this question perfectly. I would say in the next 24 hours, every time you go to complain about something, take a look at yourself, right? If you were to complain about a coworker, say, what is it about that coworker that is triggering you? And then take a deep look into yourself and say, as an example, this person over here, well, they act like they're super nice, but I just saw them in this meeting and they're not authentic, because they were really kind of crusty. And you have lost respect for them and you're kind of, you know, looking at them in a certain way. Instead of sitting there and feeling that and just being lazy about, oh, that person's a jerk, or that person doesn't walk the talk, just take a look at yourself. So for the next 24 hours, every time you complain, look at you and what's wrong, what's going on with you that's a trigger for you. And that's a powerful experiment. And I think even if you do it for 1 hour, we'd have no idea how much we complain as a society. If you even do it for 1 hour and say, why is that upsetting to me? Where in me am I not happy? And what's causing me to be upset? And just, if you want to change the world, you change yourself, right? So if you want to change how people behave, change how you behave. And it's not the cure-all and it's not instant, but it's a great exercise for an hour or 24 hours.
I love that action. Thank you so much for that. And how do people learn more about Naranjo, and how do people connect with you?
Well, our website is naranjocivil.com. And I think you can also find me on LinkedIn, just Jerry Naranjo at LinkedIn. And I'm available there. I do also do some mentoring and some coaching. I'm working right now with a person who does translation, Spanish to English. I'm coaching that person. I do some coaching through SMPS, where a young marketing and business development person is enrolled in the program and I'm their mentor. And, you know, just, I think in a lot of ways I've been mentoring people for a long time, but I'm starting to formalize that a little bit and I'm really enjoying it. And so if you're interested in having a further conversation with me, I think LinkedIn's probably the best way to find me.
Okay, amazing. So we're already connected on LinkedIn. So I'm excited to follow this new kind of like offshoot of Naranjo and see where it goes. Thank you so much, Jerry. I loved that quote and it made me really think. So for a couple weeks later to actually spend time with you unpacking it a bit more has been such a treat. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been great. I really enjoyed my time and nice meeting you and spending time with you.
Hey, before you go, I wanted to take a minute to read a review of our podcast. This review is from Odyssey Gal from the US. Excellent podcast, providing much needed insight, encouragement, and practical application into a growing field for women, and great opportunity for the construction and trades industries. Thank you, Andrea, for advancing this content. Thank you so much for that generous review. We really love hearing from our listeners. And I'm wondering if I can ask you a favor. Can you take a minute and leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts? That really helps us to get the word out so that we can keep making episodes for you for free. Thank you for listening.